Hello and welcome to The Plotting Shed. You're listening to Rachel McCarty, founder of plantplots.com and author of the book I Want to Like My Garden. Each week, The Plotting Shed discusses different aspects of garden design, but we focus on things that other books don't really talk about. I hope you enjoy this podcast, and do please hit the subscribe now button so you don't miss another episode. Well, hello and welcome back to The Plotting Shed. I am so excited to be able to introduce one of my oldest and bestest friends, Helen Mayers Peach, who has been a very good friend of mine. We play hockey together. We're still playing hockey together, but she's also an osteopath and a holistic healer of people through diet and lifestyle and food. And her belief is very much that if you take away and minimize the stresses, your body will look after yourself. And one of her main passions as to how to actually make that happen is through gardening. So hello, Helen.
Hi, good to be here.
Helen is always ringing me up about gardening and garden design. And in a few weeks' time, we're really lucky that we're going to hopefully go off to Chelsea. We've blagged ourselves a couple of press passes. So Helen is my trusty photographer, and we're going to go into Chelsea on press day and see how many celebrities and go and have a chat with the Queen, as well as looking at all the gardens, which will be fun. So we'll post those in a few weeks' time. But Helen has always got on her soapbox about how the horticultural industry has become a supermarket sales model, basically, and it's churning out stuff to make you buy things. And what we're doing is creating gardens that are no longer fit for purpose. Everybody creates a garden based on the images that they see, but we want to challenge whether those are actually any use for the modern small garden that everyone has, for the fact that we're in a flux, the climate is changing. We want to challenge what a garden should be for you now that will make your life much, much, much easier. She had some points that she thought were really, really beefed her up about garden design and where garden owners get led down the wrong path. Okay, H, what is it you wanted to get off your chest?
The idea that garden design must be based on a theme or a look. So they see them in a magazine, or even when you're going online and you're looking for garden designs, it's a Mediterranean theme, or it's a this, or it's a that. But I'm not sure that that's true. Not when it, for small gardens that have to be multifunctional.
Yeah, I think it's something that I've written about quite a lot in my book. It's on the website as well. If you go on there, plantplots.com, there's a lot of stuff about how you can look to design your garden. But I completely agree. The problem I've always found, and being a designer, people ring me up and say, oh, I want a Mediterranean themed garden. And my first question back to them is why?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought about how they want to use that space. I think that's the most important thing. Will it really work for them?
And exactly. They haven't thought how they're going to use the space. They've just been sucked into this image of something that looks beautiful. And what happens is you then tend to design to make the theme work rather than design to make the garden work for you. I mean, a classic, I mean, you see it all the time, people having, as we say, the Mediterranean gardens, and they have these beautiful white rendered walls and raised beds and shingle and white shingle everywhere, which is great in the Mediterranean when the sun bakes everything. But in the good old UK, come the winter, you're cleaning green algae off the walls.
Yeah, very, very quickly looks sort of sad and tatty and a bit miserable, doesn't it?
Yeah. We just wanted to start challenging, actually, what you've got to do with the garden design is design it for the use and your purpose, what you need it to do. The style comes later. We add that with the plants, but the design itself has to be fit for purpose. So that was our number one. Right, what was number two, H?
Oh, big garden borders use up valuable space. This idea that if you put a substantial size border in a small garden, it's just somehow using precious space that they should be doing something else with.
Oh, I know. And so you end up with this scenario that you have people with small gardens and small plants. Garden design is not about the size of what you're putting in it, it's about how you're using it. So it's about identifying those areas of the garden that you will use, the usable space. You're always going to sit there because that's where the sun shines, but you're never going to sit there because it's underneath the tree or it's the cool corner. Well, that's the place you put the plants. If you're never going to sit there, the plants aren't taking up any of your space, are they?
It's not lost space, is it?
Yeah, it's all about usable space and dead space. You keep the usable space for where you're actually going to physically plonk yourself. And that's where your patios and various things are that you want to use. But the space that you're never going to sit in, that can be for plants. And a big border in a small garden actually can make a small garden appear much, much bigger. Right. Number three. What's number three?
Oh, this is an old chestnut. It's getting talked about more nowadays, to be fair, particularly a small garden problem, and that a big lawn is going to be best for kids.
Why?
Well, I think people want space for their kids to run around, and they want them to be able to sort of let off steam and all that sort of thing. But some of the gardens I think that we're talking about here, that are certainly in my mind, are the really tiny back gardens that are being built pretty much with most modern housing estates.
How much steam can you run off in a 3x4 metre lawn?
Exactly. This is not a game where you're going to be playing badminton or kicking a football around or doing anything much, really. You really need to go to the park to do that kind of thing.
So what's the lawn doing for the kids? And this is where both H and I want you to start to challenge your concept of what a garden is. Because, yeah, I agree, you know, having an open space for the kids is nice if they can run around in it. But if there's not a great deal of space for them to really do the things that they want to do, what is the lawn achieving? All it actually is an empty, flat, green space with nothing in it. So what do? Okay, you plonk a swing on it, or you might put a slide on it, and that's fine. But how much time are the children really spending there?
So I think it might be better to create somewhere for them to explore.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
They can go on a little journey, a meandering journey in the garden. They could lose themselves for hours in that sort of space.
Sensory, making something that encourages butterflies and bees that's not so precious is far better. Have a mud kitchen. Having a mud kitchen is far better use of the space for a small child than a perfect lawn. Mm.
Somewhere to dig, that kind of thing. Yeah, mm. The kids to get their hands in and get involved.
Yeah.
Get lost in the garden by exploring borders and the different things that are growing.
We've got to get them away from the Xboxes, and I'm sorry, a small flat lawn is not an interesting enough space to get children out of in front of their screens and out into the garden, which is the same thing as I think you said on your fourth beef that you had.
Yeah, that putting a big lawn in the garden will make the garden look bigger, so filling your space with lawn, I'm really not at all sure that works.
When you expand a lawn and you create a shape of a lawn in a garden, which is nice and fine, what you're doing is you're defining the edge of the lawn, and that actually defines the boundary. It's the usable boundary that you're giving yourself. So if the lawn is inside a square garden, then by creating a lawn you are shrinking your usable boundary down to a smaller space, and then you've may got narrow borders between that and your boundaries. The garden feels smaller. So the way that you make your garden appear bigger is not to make the lawn bigger, it's to make the boundaries and the fences less noticeable. And that will make your garden feel bigger. You can't physically make it bigger, but it will feel bigger if you don't notice where the end of the garden is.
Actually, that takes me to my next point quite nicely, because do you have to have a border, for example, between the fence and the lawn?
No. And bear in mind, you know, we're challenging your idea of how you should construct a garden. In a small garden, if you make the border follow the line of the boundary, all you're saying is, look at the boundary. Look at the edge of everything. So what you have to do is, and again, if we then have boundary, hedge, border, lawn, once again, you're shrinking down your usable space, which is the lawn space, all the time. I personally think in a small garden, what you need to do is we need to get rid of this centrifuge approach. You know, the one where you have the big lawn in the middle and then we fling all the plants to the edges so we don't use up space. And actually all you get is an unusable goldfish bowl of a garden. You need to take lawns right up to the fence, but we have big borders, maybe just one, a big look at me border. Something that grabs your attention, that holds your attention, so when you're sitting in your small garden, it's full of stuff that makes you look at it, and then you don't notice how small the garden is. And it doesn't matter that you haven't got a pristine lawn. It doesn't matter, because if the kids are running around and can roll on the grass and there's daisy chains and there's beetles and there's little flowers tucked in the grass and you haven't got to mow it every week, you can enjoy your garden. It's a better place for you to be. Which is one of the things that you said to me about, H, about why are we so wedded to having a lawn in the garden? What's the psyche about lawns in your garden? Where did this come from?
I think it's changing a lot, thankfully. I think the idea of what constitutes a lawn actually is changing. There's lots of meadow planting going on. And I think for some people, just happy if it's green. It doesn't have to be grass, for example. It could be lots of things. And if we're going over to a meadow start and people wonder how on earth you're going to do that in a small garden. But you and I have seen some fabulous examples of this where they have made small spaces into a bit of meadow and they've just sort of mowed a path through it. And there's so many more options. And I know you're going to go into this in much more detail.
In terms of, and I know it's going to be very difficult for a lot of people to think, but my lawn is part of what the garden is, this flat, mown, pristine environment. And actually what I want to challenge and get people to challenge is, no, what you are wedded to is the control of the environment. We have been told and conditioned to believe that a beautiful green lawn shows that you are a good egg because you're looking after your garden, you're keeping things neat and tidy, you're doing it properly. Well, nothing could be further from the truth. All it is doing is making you get on a hamster wheel of garden and repetitive garden chores. So there are alternative ways of having grass and gardens that you'll find more interesting. You're sitting in the countryside on a bench and you've got this big field of wheat in front of you that's being blown by the wind. Do you watch it or do you watch the lawn that's mown next to you in somebody's garden?
Very true, very true. Also, the buzz of the insects and the butterflies and around a meadow planted lawn space, let's call it a lawn space, not a lawn, but where you might have had a lawn, it's 1,000 times more interesting.
So what we want to try and do over this next series of podcasts with you is to deal with some of these issues that give you the confidence to make your own decisions about your own garden so that you don't feel that you are constrained by what the horticultural industry tells you should be doing. For example, like it's summer, we have to put summer bedding in the garden. Well, I haven't put summer bedding in my garden for about 25 years. And I've got a fabulous looking garden. I love my garden, but I've never gone out and bought plants that I put in a pot. And then 3 months later, because they've all died, I throw away again, along with the pot, because it's not a useful use of your resources and your time. And I want to show you how we can make better gardens, but reduce the time that you have gardening. And we have to do that by rethinking what it is to have a garden. And we've got to, I think, break the cycle that the industry has that shows you these images of expensive, spectacular, incredibly beautiful, designed, packed full of plants, gardens with immaculate water, you know, green grass and watering systems, and you thinking that's what we're trying to achieve. Actually, that's the opposite of what you're trying to achieve. And what we want to do is bring it back so that you can have a better garden, but actually spend more time enjoying the garden and having a garden that is better for the environment, but it's more interesting. I mean, shrubs and a bit of lawn don't really float your boat often, do they? You know, you need the garden to do something. And at the moment, because your garden isn't interesting, what do? You go out to the garden centre, don't you? And people go, oh, I'm just buying some bits for the garden. I've bought a water feature. I'll come and plonk it there. I've gone and bought a new patio set because that's making the garden more interesting because I've got more features in it. But it doesn't. So what we're trying to do is really challenge you about what you think a garden should be. And the upshot of it is it has to be designed to suit your purpose first. Next week, we're going to do deconstructing the garden, where we actually really just take this a little bit further and see how and what changes you can make to make your garden unconventionally brilliant. So, bye for now from me.
And from me.
We'll see you next week. Bye, guys. Well, thank you for listening. You have been listening to Rachel McCartney of The Plotting Shed. If you've got any questions about this podcast, please email me, rachel@plantplots.com, or you visit the website. We've loads of different information on garden design and gardening advice, along with planting plans that you can download. You can look at the designs that we've created. So do take a look, and please do hit the subscribe now button so you don't miss another episode. You can also donate if you go onto the website plantplots.com. There's a little button there saying you can buy me a coffee. So all donations will be hugely appreciated. Thank you very much. Enjoy your week, enjoy your garden, take care and stay well.